see. Okay, so at this time, I should briefly qualify. Requirements for chairing a meeting at the Central Orlando Group Saturday night speakers meeting are 1 year of continuous sobriety, have Central as your home group, and attend a group conscience meeting. So got to the point where drinking was really, really fun at first. I loved it. Then I still loved it, but no one else really liked when I did it. And then, except some people who didn't know me well. And then it just started, the consequences started to pile up. And those were material consequences and emotional consequences. And it just got to the point where I couldn't drink anymore. I didn't want to drink anymore, but I also had to. I didn't know how not to. I had a sort of an allergy, I guess, in my thinking that every time I quit, I thought I could go back to it and I wouldn't have the same consequences. And I was wrong. I inevitably lost control. So I have a speaker here. I'm not going to share too much, but bottom line, AA helped me, and it can help you if you keep coming back and you take some suggestions from a sponsor who's worked the steps with a sponsor. So, the group has asked me to remind you to please make sure your phones are off to refrain from moving around or talking while the speaker is sharing. And just real quickly, I go to another meeting on Sunday mornings at 10 a.m., wake up call Orlando. And I heard this beautiful lady speak a number of times, and she always has something really special to say that just hits the spot for me. And I hope you find that she does too. She's going to share her experience, strength, and hope. This is Michelle.
My name is Michelle, and I am an alcoholic. It's good to be here. Thanks, Matt. God always gives you what you need, so I guess I need to be here tonight. And normally, at this time, I'd be in bed. My life has gotten pretty freaking boring, and I like it that way. My experience, strength, and hope. Let me just start by saying I love AA. If it weren't for AA, I celebrated 51 years of age in December, and my friend and I used to say, like, I never thought I'd get past 30, and that's the truth. And on March 1st, I celebrated 21 years of sobriety. And I hope you're all clapping for yourselves, because I could never have done it without AA. And, you know, I've my sponsor from back home, Jamie. I see a Jamie here, and I'm always like, I call her Jamie. I mean, but she used to say to me, you're a goddamn miracle. And she'd say that, you know, because she was my sponsor, but she'd say that to anybody that picked up a chip, even a 24-hour chip. And, you know, I don't want to get into a drunkalogue first before telling you that, you know, as a result of AA, I have a life today. I have a beautiful partner who actually wanted to come hear me speak tonight, which is, you know, a miracle in and of itself. We have a beautiful home. We've got two dogs in the car. I got a job. I smell okay, if anything, which is a miracle. I have a family that loves me. I love them. I show up today, which is a tall order sometimes. And, you know, more than all that, AA gave me myself back. I like me. I have integrity. I try to speak the truth. I'm flawed. You know, I'm not afraid to show my warts. I have a God in my life. And, you know, I'd know today without a doubt that that God loves me. And I didn't know that before I came into the rooms of AA. You know, if you don't know this already, this for me was the best gig in town. you know, I'm a little emotional tonight. I'll just put this out there. tomorrow I fly to Queens. My daughter is looking at 8 to 9 for multiple felonies, and the trial starts on Monday. So when I say God always gives you what you need, when Matt came up to me, I didn't know I was going to be going to Queens because we couldn't find her. I wasn't sure if she fled or hurt herself or, you know. But, you know, and it doesn't, I was sharing, my home group's the women's meeting from the heart on Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. And, you know, I got there this morning. My partner said, "Don't you think a meeting would help?" Don't you love that? So I went to my home group this morning, and the topic was on fear. And, you know, and that's like how God does this to me. Like, there's no coincidences, you know, none. And that's a freaking amazing thing. So, you know, that conscious contact that you know, that I've had, I never had when I was out there, ever. I used to try. I used to get wasted and write Dear God letters. But that was about it. So, anyway, so what it was like. I'm from Pennsylvania. I'm a Philly chick. Anybody that knows me knows it. Yo. I was born in, just on the outskirts of Philly. My dad was a raging alcoholic. When I say raging alcoholic, he was very violent, and he drank a lot. And, you know, I had alcoholism on both sides of my family. My mom was an only child, and she's not an alcoholic, but the line runs far and wide. My maternal grandmother, her youngest brother, had 30 years sober. We had a wonderful relationship before he died. But before that, he worked in Detroit in the auto industry, and he actually lost his arm as a result of being drunk on the job. And I actually thought it was kind of cool. He used to, like, push his glasses up with his thumb and tell me ghost stories. And it's kind of like, without the arm, it kind of really worked. And, you know, my father's father bled to death, and I really didn't have a relationship with them. They were, you know, I always think when I hear many of us suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, like I had alcoholism, I had grave emotional and mental disorders in my gene pool, so I am not like the picture of health on a good day, and yet, you know, we can stay sober under any and all, you know, as a result of this fellowship. You know, there's a lot of mental health. My mom was carrying my brother and walked in, and you know, even though my mom was an only child, back in the day, you know, the Irish Catholic, I mean, they had all kinds of kids. So the baby in the house was like the same age as my mom. My grandma, you know, was weird, and he killed himself by carbon monoxide. So my mom walked in on that. So there was a lot of mental illness, a lot of depression, a lot of, you know, and I don't know, like, and my house was insane. My grandmother was my angel. Like, I remember, like, leaving, like, my alcoholic, chaotic life, my, you know, the violence, and she lived only 2 blocks away, and I spent every minute I could with her, you know. I remember just listening to her hum. I just wanted to be right next to her, you know. It was that kind of peace I felt, you know, and, you know, and I swore, like, I would never pick up a drink because I saw how it just destroyed my family. And then I turned 11, you know. And I had all the isms, you know. I had all the isms from the time I was a kid. Like, I remember, you know, I never wanted to be in my own body. I ate to get out of it. I went from a size, like, 6X to a size 14 overnight. I did a lot of fantasy. I remember, like, we'd be in the car driving and I'd be somewhere else, even like as a baby, you know, like I remember not wanting to be in my own skin. And, you know, it's interesting, like I was, you know, I walk a lot, you know, it keeps me, you know, centered. And I was walking today and I thought, you know, You know, the difference between then and now, like, you know, I believe, like, everybody's born perfect. This is just my belief. Like, everybody's born innocent. And I think we spent a lifetime trying to get back to the person that God truly intended for us to be. And, you know, and I read that's the definition of spirituality or something close to that, that, you know, spirituality is getting back to that person that God truly intended for us to be. And through this program, like, you know, I'm starting to get there, you know, but I had a long way to go. I mean, I was, you know, I think any of us that grow up in alcoholism, you know, we're waiting to pick up that drink. We can't wait to pick it up. Like, we have to pick it up. And I know for me, I picked it up and I was like, whew, thank you. Like, it stopped. Like, it stopped everything. You know, it stopped the noise. It stopped the chaos. I mean, I was like, you know, I was insane. I mean, you know, there's a part in We Agnostics that says deep down in every one of us is that fundamental belief in God. And, you know, for me, like, I wanted to get there. Like, even as a kid, you know, I remember, you know, at recess, like, I was in fifth grade, my parents were going through a divorce, and I was reading the Bible at recess while the other kids were playing. Like, I knew I needed help. Like, I knew that God could give me that help, but I didn't know how to get there. And, you know, it's weird I'm sharing this. Like, I, you know, as Matt said, you know, just ask God to speak through you. So I've told my story many times. I've never told this, and I don't know why I'm telling it tonight, but it's just, you know, somebody out there I believe must need to hear this. But, you know, so I picked up my first drink when I was 11, and everything stopped. And, you know, I never liked the taste of alcohol. I mean, I like Kahlua. Kahlua was good for breakfast. But I don't remember liking it. Like, I mean, even like Slow Gin Fizz. And I mean, I drank, you know, mudslides. And, you know, I was a pig. I mean, I loved iced teas because you had five things in there and I would get wasted on like three of them, you know. I love that. But I never liked the taste of it. I always drank to get drunk. I was a blackout drinker. You know, I didn't, until I came into AA, I didn't realize, like, that's a sign of alcoholism. I thought that was the purpose. Like, I mean, I just never knew. I mean, in high school, like, I drank every chance I got. You know, but I was a pretty good kid. Like, my mom was raising my brother and I by herself, and, you know, my dad left when I was 11, and don't think that's a coincidence. And, you know, that's the first time I remember after he left, like, I walked up those steps, and I didn't feel fear for the first time walking into my house, you know. So I knew I had to drink. Anyway, through high school, I did pretty well. I got really lost in sports. I was a big athlete. I was a basketball player. I was a softball player. And so I did really well, and I got a free ride, basically, to, at the time, it was like the 11th best school in the country. It was Franklin and Marshall. And I was pretty bright, you know. So I got up to Franklin and Marshall, and, you know, they have what's called fraternities. And you can drink like a pig for free. And I found that fascinating. I mean, I didn't have to pay for it. I remember, my best friend was this guy, Ian Murdoch, and he was the only other alcoholic on the campus that I knew of. Like, everybody knew Ian was an alcoholic. He had a three-legged dog named Tripod. I always thought he was cute. But, I mean, he would do shit like, go ahead, take my car. I didn't have a license. I drove from Lancaster to Philly, and I thought, I'll get him a case of beer. He'll be all right. And he was. He's like, Moosehead? Yeah. Where'd you go? Oh, right. You know, Philly. So, You know, I mean, I drank, like, with reckless... In fact, they used to have drinking parties. I don't know, for those of you who went to college, like, that was a really big thing back then. And, you know, it was, like, the wrestling team, the football team, and then me, Ian, and two other friends. And we freaking won. The rules were, like, don't puke till halftime. I was like, we got this, you know? I mean, and, you know, I mean, I just... But, you know, it's funny, like... Just even standing here now, like, consequences started even then. You know, the consequences, like, certainly you can't, like, study at Hildy's, which was the local tavern, and pass any kind of exam. So I had, like, a 1.8, I think so of course I lost my scholarship and those kind of consequences. But evidently, like, friends would come to visit me, but I wouldn't know they were there. And, you know, I would be, like, literally high for the weekend, and they'd be like, that was not fun. And, you know, I had one friend there besides Ian, this girl Jill, and you know, I still remember, like, I must have come to, it was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and she walked in the dorm, and there I was, and I must have thought, you know, I had made the bathroom that night, but clearly, you know, I didn't. And she looked at me and with such disgust, like, I still can see the way she looked at me, and I got that look a lot after that. And she couldn't even be friends with me. And she was a party girl. I mean, I thought she was a party girl. But, you know, for a woman alcoholic, the shame that we go through and that we put ourselves through, there's nothing like it. And I'm not knocking guys, you know. I'm sure you guys, you know. But somehow, like, when a guy pisses on himself, like, that's kind of, yeah, he pissed on himself, you know. I mean, at least that's my... I mean, I'm a Philly chick. I mean, we, you know. it's okay if a guy does? I don't know. But I don't think you get the shame that, you know, it's just so ugly when a woman does it. And then just, you know, whatever. that's my bias. But, you know, so, yeah, so my first year of college did not go well. So I left, and I got back home, and my mom was pissed, and she said, you're going to have to start working. And I was like, oh, no, I'm not. Like, I did not want to be responsible. So I ended up getting into, she said, well, why don't you, you know, it was like August before I made the decision that I wasn't going to go back. I mean, and I, you know what, why I didn't go back? I mean, I could have gone back on academic probation, but I was too ashamed to go back. Like, I knew that people were talking about me. I knew that some of the things that I had done when I was up there, I mean, I'm not going to do my fist step up here, but it was ugly, you know? And so I couldn't go back. And so I went to see my high school guidance counselor. I'm like, look, you know, that really didn't work out so well. You know, that whole college thing you got me into? You got any other suggestions? She's like, how about nursing school? I'm like, great! I mean, that's how much thought I put into it. So I get there, and I'm like with these, what I call them, the sugar cookies, and they're like, oh, I always wanted to be a nurse. I'm like, please, what the F is an OR? Like, I didn't even know what I was doing there. And, I mean, I would bring my jug of Gallo. I'd sit in the back of class. I'd be, like, hammered by the end of it. I mean, I was a scene. Like, I was just not, I was not, like, I listen to some people's story, and they're like, oh, I sip martinis initially. And I'm like, I never did. Jug of Gallo. Mad Dog 2020, Red Lady 21. I mean, I was just, whatever I could get my hands on. And, you know, so, and I really didn't get into heavy drugs, you know, initially. And I, you know, I know it's an AA meeting, and I'm respectful, but, you know, I mean, the big book is very clear. An addict. And I was, I mean, if I thought it could change who I was and how I felt, I took it. So when I was in nursing school, I mean, it didn't go much better. Like, it didn't go much better, but I did graduate in 4 years. It was a 3-year program, so it took me a little longer. And I found it incredibly easy. I mean, I guess the only thing I really want to tell you about my experience at nursing school was that, I had this roommate, and I don't know why this is getting me. I don't even know why this is coming to me, but her name was Jeannie, and I knew that this girl loved me. Like, not in a, you know, sexual way, but I knew she loved me. And she would come in and she would beg me. She'd be like, "You are a mess. Like, you truly need some help." And I'm thinking, she seems so upset. Like, she's really upset. And the one night that she came in, I had apparently, because I was a blackout drinker, so, like, I can't tell you a whole lot of stories because I only remember, like, the aftermath. Like, I remember the back of the police car. I remember the hospital. You know, I remember what I was told. And I think people lie. You know, she was so upset, and I apparently had been running through, I went to school in Philly, and I apparently had been running through University of Pennsylvania campus half-clothed with no shoes in the middle of winter, and apparently, from what I'm told, I collapsed the arch of my foot. So I knew something had happened, because, you know, you come to the next day, and it's like, you go through the checklist, where's my car, where's my, you know, who's he? Who's she? Who's that? You know, who are they? And then you start, like, the checklist. Like, do I have any money? Did I get arrested? Did I, you know, like, the litany that we go through. And I looked down. I didn't even feel it yet. And I saw my foot, and it was literally this big. And I was like, that's why she's upset. So I promised her at that point I would go to AA. I think I was like 18 or 19. And, you know, I truly, truly believe that everybody that walks into these doors needs the seat. I mean, that's just me. I mean, I don't think anybody's like, oh, I wonder what they're doing in AA tonight. Let me go check it out. So she was so freaking upset. I'm like, look, Jeannie, I'll go. Like, tell me what to do. Tell me where to go. We looked in the phone book. We went to an AA meeting. My very first AA meeting was 4100 Chestnut Street. I was like the only white person there, and I walked in, and, you know, I gotta tell you, like, even then, I felt comfortable. I mean, they swooned on me. And they gave me that checklist of the 20 questions, you know, and I got 13 right. And I was like, and then at the bottom, like, and I still think that's kind of a trick, truly. I mean, I'm 21 years sober, and I think, come on. I mean, don't normal drinkers get a couple more yeses than three? So I was, like, reading this, and I'm thinking, okay, well, like, and they all seemed really concerned about, like, they would say stuff like, just don't drink and come back tomorrow, like, now till bedtime tonight. And I'd be like, they really are serious about this stuff, you know? So I did it, and I did it for 90 days. I mean, I did it for 90 days. I was like, I didn't want my roommate so upset. Like, everybody there seemed to really like me. And then day 95 was New Year's, and I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, they can't be staying sober on New Year's, you know? Like, and I kept thinking, like, if I could stay sober for 90 days, I must not be an alcoholic, right? I mean, that's the way I actually thought. So day 95, I always think of this. I don't know why, you know, it's funny the things that you remember. Like, I did some extraterrestrial on the car hood because somebody got a bag of something, and I was like, I'm in. And then I got a couple Michelob Lights. I was at the McDade house, and my friend, who was my best friend, who was so happy that I quit drinking, saw me with a Michelob Light, came up and punched me in the face in the middle of the dance floor, and I fell down and slit my pants. And I was like, you're such a bitch! It's one beer! You know? And I know you're not allowed to curse, right?
Oh, no.
Oh, okay. I'm trying to really behave myself. I mean, I might be sober, but I still talk like a trucker. So anyway, you know, I called this chick my walking fist up because nobody else wanted anything to do with me. But I think she was just kind of entertained about what the night would bring, so she used to hang around. But, you know, I was definitely out of control. Like taking on bachelorette parties just for the hell of it, you know, like things that we do when we're drinking, you know, it's crazy. So I'm not going to get into all the drunk stories, but I will say my drinking continued. And I kept having this thought that everybody was wondering why I wasn't showing up to meetings. And I mean, years later, like I would still think, you know, I can't go back there because they're going to know that I was there and, you know, where have you been? And because my ego wasn't very big either. So anyway, long story short, I ended up, I'll skip through, I mean, it didn't get any better. It got really ugly. I got very heavy into drugs. And then I met this girl, and I'm gay. There, that's over. Because I'm thinking, how do I tell this story? But I mean, he's saying I'm going to wake up call. I mean, like, you know, whatever. I mean, clearly I, whatever. So I was really hot on her, and she could drink like nobody, right? Like nobody's business. And I loved that. I mean, and she was crazy as a mother humper. Like, we used to, like, pop beers on, like, people's, you know, car window. I mean, it was just fun. Like, or so I think you were saying it was fun. I mean, it probably wasn't really fun, but for me it was fun, you know? So anyway, one day we get up, it's 10 o'clock in the morning, I think I'm on my third beer, and she looks at me and says, I really want this relationship to work. Why? I have no idea. I was not apprised. And she's like, I'm going to quit drinking. And I'm like, oh. I had an anxiety attack. I'm like, I'm going to finish this beer, and then let's talk about your ideas. And I mean, I truly was, like, panicked. Like, I could feel my heart racing. I'm thinking, well, this isn't going to last. Well, it did. I mean, it truly did. And long story short, she got never let somebody get sober on you. It's a bad thing because then your drinking is really highlighted. Like then it would be like then it would be like Thanksgiving, and she'd be like, okay, well, you can drink on Thanksgiving. So it'd be like 2 weeks later, and she'd be like, I said you could drink on Thanksgiving. I'm like, hello, it's not even Christmas. And it did not work out. She went off and got sober, and I continued to do what I did. And, you know, for those of us who try to control our alcohol intake when we're alcoholic, you may as well just freaking drink. I mean, I was crazier than a mother humper. And in fact, by the time I came into AA, I was in so much pain, I didn't think it was the alcohol. I thought I was crazy. And I remember... I walked in and, be good to newcomers because, I mean, I just think when I finally, God broke through my arrogance to bring me into the rooms of AA because I thought I knew how to live. I mean, I remember coming in AA and I got sober and I would hear things like halt and I'd think, I don't need to eat every day. I don't need to sleep every day. I could really sleep every 2 days, 4 hours, and I'd be good. Like, I did not know how to freaking live. I mean, truly. I didn't know what... I remember my first sponsor, he used to say to me, are you mad, glad, sad, or scared? Pick one. And I wouldn't know. I mean, I might have been like throwing a chair up against the wall because anger and I were very, very tight. But I didn't know what I was feeling. I mean, truly. I knew I was very uncomfortable. I knew I wanted to drink. And I remember leaving AA meetings and going, sitting in front of... One of my girlfriends used to say, Seamus McMulligan's, because I would leave the AA meeting, and I'd sit in Seamus McMulligan's parking lot debating whether or not I was going to have a drink. And I did that day after day, and I thought, if something doesn't change soon, I am going to drink. You know, and then I would go to a meeting, and I'd hear, don't quit before the miracle happens. You know, one day I was in a meeting, and I used to go to meetings all the time because, like, I didn't know what else to do. And I knew, I mean, there was part of me that knew I could not drink anymore. I mean, it was physically affecting me. I had nobody in my life. I lived in a rat-infested, roach-infested apartment that I was going to lose. And, you know, my family couldn't count on me. And yet, you know, I felt like, you know, it's that jumping off spot. You knew you couldn't live with it. You knew you can't, you know, live without it, you know. And I remember coming to a meeting and I think, tonight's the night I'm going to drink. And I'll never forget this girl. You know, like, AA has taught me, like, not to judge the outsides, you know. This girl, her and I had nothing in common, you know, absolutely nothing. She was like this, like, I was going to say skanky biker chick. And she was sitting in the back of the room, and I had already figured her out. Like, I figured everybody else out. And I had a plan to drink. I mean, I was angry. And she said, "We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it." And that's the first time I ever heard it. And I thought, I want that. Like, I want to be able to walk with my head high, not worry about who I'm going to bump into, you know, and be at peace, you know. I want that. And I didn't drink that night. And, you know, and so, like, I ended up finding my way to this clubhouse that I really, you know, believe got me sober. You know, I loved it because I loved the diversity. It's kind of like this room. It was young, old, black, white, men, women, straight, gay. And, and every time people would open up their mouth, it was the power in that room because we were all so different, but we all loved each other because we were just trying to get sober. You know, there's so much power in that. My best friend, there was this guy named Curtis, who's this big black guy, and I used to, like, pull my chair up and sit right next to him because he had killed somebody in a blackout. And I remember thinking, if God loves him, God could love me too. You know, he ended up taking his own life. But he kept me sober. And, like, that's how this freaking thing works, you know? And there were so many people in that room. You know, there was a woman there, her name was Bobby. She smoked like a fish. She was this old, fat, little, short thing. And it was her chair. We have people like that, right? And I'd be ready to drink, and she'd be like, "You didn't get here from eating too many green beans." And I think, she's a fucking genius. I did it, you know? But, like, once I got in the AA, my disease started, like, separating me out. Like, that was my disease. Like, why I wasn't the same as you guys. Because I was gay or because, you know, I was fat. I quit drinking. And I was still smoking 3 packs a day. I ended up weighing in at, like, 240. I mean, I couldn't, like, fill the hole in my soul, you know. I couldn't. And, you know, somebody said, "You need a God in your life." And I was like, "Oh, he's not going to really want anything to do with me. Like, you don't know what I've done, you know." And I remember, it's funny. I used to go to speaker meetings, and I'd want to hear it all. Because I would think, like, you know, I could see God in you guys, but I couldn't see him in me. And I really didn't believe, you know, we all have our demons, you know. And I thought, like, I'm never going to be okay in God's eyes. And, you know, that guy that relapsed and said, as we understand him, saved my life. You know, I have a God in my life today that is just so powerful. It's so funny. My partner laughs because I created a meditation room in our house, you know. And she's like, "What do you guys talk about up there?" But it's so, like, I know God loves me. And that is, like, the most freaking powerful thing, you know. It's just it's amazing, you know. And I don't, like, it's not like I walk around like I'm holy because I'm so freaking not holy. But I, you know, here's what happened. I used to get really embarrassed but everybody was like, "The answers are in the big book." So I used to have to take the train back and forth to work. So I would take the big book and I would hide it in the magazine, right? And so I got on We Agnostics, which is, by the way, my favorite chapter, and it gets that part in the very first paragraph that says, like, if you are alcoholic, and I'm like, well, I freaking, like, clearly, I think I might have a little drinking problem. And you have, like, basically two choices. You could die a horrific alcoholic death, count me in, or live life on a spiritual path. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, they're my two choices. And I remember thinking that day, like, I've got to get this. Like, I've got to get this. So, you know, for me, you know, I mean, I think the whole program is spiritual. I think from the day you walk in and you surrender and you open the heaviest door in the world, you know, and you walk in and you earn your seat. And if you're here, don't ever let anybody take your seat from you. I always tell my sponsees that, you know, like, you earned it. Like, nobody can keep you out of a meeting. You go in and you reclaim your seat. And, you know, because we work so hard to get here. You know, we work so hard. So by the time we get here, and, you know, I think surrender is like a tall order too. You know, it's a lot to be vigilant in this program. I mean, there's a lot of, I mean, if we really truly were good AA people, I mean, we'd be at the mosque right now. I mean, well, I mean, you guys are pretty good. You're at a meeting. But I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's so much to do, like prayer, meditation, sponsorship, you know, service, you know, meditation, prayer, you know, taking care of yourself physically. I mean, all of that counts for me, for my surrender. And, you know, and then, you know, you got to work the steps for me. For me, you know, I remember I took my third step and, you know, I had this sponsor, Rick, for a while, and what a good guy. And I remember we were getting ready to do my third step, and we were going to do it on the boardwalk at Rehoboth Beach. And we were getting ready to do it, and he's getting ready to pray with me, and I said, whoa, 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 whoa. He said, what? I said, I don't think I can do this. He said, why not? And I said, because what if God doesn't want me to be gay? What if God doesn't want me, because at the time I was, you know, with somebody I thought I wanted to spend the rest of my life with. We do that a lot, don't we? And then God's like, that ain't going to work. And he said, when are you going to understand that God wants you to be happy, joyous, and free? Like, that's all God wants. You know, God wants you to be happy, joyous, and free, and to be of service to others. That's it. He's already got your back. And, you know, and that I will never forget. Like, any time I get scared, you know. But anyway, I think you need to have that realization, you know, of your own God, you know, to be able to walk through the journey of the steps. I mean, for me, like, you know, 4 through 9 has been a constant, you know. I mean, for me, step 4, I learned that my fear drives the bus most days. I mean, I don't process things quickly. I process things very slowly, and when I get awake enough, it's usually fear that's driving, you know, something that's not going well in my life. And you know, I spent a lot of time, I mean, you know, I got sober, and you know, I look at 6 and 7, and for me, like, when I think about 6 and 7, I had no humility when I got sober. I got sober, I ended up going to law school, I became an attorney, you know, I was already a nurse. I adopted 4 kids. They were all special needs kids. You know, I like thought I could like move mountains and solve world hunger. And I found out that that's not the case, you know. And I'm not asked to do that by God. I'm asked to do what's in front of me. You know, when I think about 8 and 9, the person that comes to my mind is my mom. And I think about like how many nights, you know, to leave somebody with, you know, no peace of mind is just a horrific thing. I mean, you know, I remember one time she ran to the ER. There were 3 Michelle Reeds in my neighborhood, and two of us were like alcoholic drug addicts, and then there was the other one. And so she ended up in the ER, and it wasn't me, it was the other alcoholic drug addict. And but she bitched me out, and I was like, it wasn't even me. And she's like, this tonight, you know, like, are you serious? Like, we go for, you know, turkey dinner, and they're still telling stories from 21 years ago. It's like, come on. So I robbed her of that. And, And I'll never repay it, but, you know, like her 70th birthday, I took her to Punta Cana. She had the time of her life, you know. And I'm sober today. And that's all she wants. She doesn't worry about me anymore. You know, I think about when she remarried, and she married this guy, and he was 45, and he... he died of a blood clot that went to his lung, and they were trying to find me and couldn't. You know, that's what I'm talking about when you rob somebody of their peace of mind. I came home, and on my answering machine was, "I'm sorry to hear about what happened to your stepdad." And I didn't know what had happened, you know. So it's that kind of stuff. Like, we like, I always think about that guy that comes up from the cellar. "Ain't it grand, the wind stopped blowing. I got sober. Let's celebrate," you know. But people are scarred forever as a result of our stuff, you know. And so we spend the rest of our life trying to do better. And being in a room full of people that understand that, you know, that have been there and have done that and have lived it and get it and don't judge it, you know. But I can show you my warts and you can say, "Keep coming back." And that's the whole, you know, the whole can of peas, ball of worms, whatever. I don't freaking know. So I am really grateful, you know. You know, I'm grateful for my life. I'm grateful to have this program. I'm grateful to be of service. I'm grateful that that you guys keep coming back to help keep me sober. And you know, and I'm so grateful that I didn't have to take a drink today. And I haven't wanted to take a drink in a very, very, very long time. And I feel forever blessed. Thanks. Thank you.